Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
Good news, everyone! It's Talking Futurama, where we drink delicious ooze. I'm your host, Disgusting Little Man Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of Futurama. Who else is here with me today?
Ow, my sperm! Henry Gilbert.
Wow, and who else?
I'm Jeremy Parrish, the original party worm.
Wow, and today's episode is Fry and the Slurm Factory.
No, yeah, no, yeah, no, wait, no, yeah, yeah, no, no. Yes!
Today's episode aired on November 14th, 1999. And as always, Henry will tell us what happened on this mythical day in the past.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
Whimmy wham wham wazzle, Bob. The United Nations imposes sanctions on Afghanistan, which I'm sure will really stop the Taliban. Pokemon's first movie is number one at the box office, while Kevin Smith's Dogma premieres at number three.
I saw that movie with my first girlfriend at the tender age of 17.
Pokemon or Dogma?
Pokemon. No. I skipped
sure
Dogma.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You were a Viewisk Universe head, I thought. I was there day one on Dogma.
I don't even know, actually, if it came around where I was. I don't know if it got a really wide release. It got a semi-big release, but I just don't remember seeing it.
It was a light release, yeah.
I feel like I saw it on marquees in West Texas. So if you had that like God mocking movie in Bible thumping Texas, it must have made it everywhere.
That must have been me slipping from my Viewisk Universe fandom then.
I mean,
Kevin Smith is very disappointed.
He was talking up Dogma.
I think
for
that's
so fucking long.
I think that's why I might have just secretly resented it. Like he was acting as if it was his magnum opus, and then when I finally saw it, even as a fan, I was like, this isn't very good.
Well, maybe that is his magnum opus.
Oh, you're forgetting about Jersey Girl or the Blunt Man and Chronic Flash cartoon for
there's also comic book guys. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
boy,
I mean,
there's so much, such a rich pantheon to choose from. Really.
Yoga hosers. I mean, it's all good.
I wish Kevin Smith a long and healthy life. The last time we joked about it.
Oh no.
Podcast too long, he had a heart attack.
He's a great podcaster. I like that Jeremy laughed at the idea of a movie called Yoga Hosers.
No, I know that it exists.
It's about Nazi sausages that jump up people's butts.
It's really about that Harley Smith is a nice young actress, and she should be in movies.
Give her a chance. It is fun. I like that Kevin Smith dropped all pretension, and now he just makes Troma movies. Mm-hmm. And now that Troma can't make movies anymore, he's making them. So good job. Good on you.
But the Pokemon first movie, that came at just the right time, at the height of Pokemon insanity, I recall.
I believe that's
my
called Pokemania.
Pokemania. Well, I failed as a wordsmith. No, I remember being in my junior math class, and people are asking, like, are you gonna see Pokemon? I was like, yeah, and I didn't realize it was an own on me of just like, this dork's gonna see this kid's movie Pokemon.
That's why I brought a girl.
I brought my mom. The experience of watching it in theaters, even if you're the biggest Pokemaniac who is dying to see this Mewtwo movie, the opening, the short of Pikachu's Vacation, where no one says words other than Pokemon names.
It's kind of.
It's like a drug trip. Your just brain is just fried afterwards. You're like, what are movies anymore?
I was going to say, it's kind of like baby garbage. It was the wrong way to open that movie. And did they even like do the Who's That Pokemon in the movie itself?
I don't believe so.
I have a vague memory of it. Yeah. That maybe could have been a joke in the movie, but.
But finally, Lena Inverse's voice actress was on the big screen.
Yeah.
She always deserved to be.
Playing Ash. Wait, yep. No. That's the voice of Amelia from Slayers.
Yeah, Lena was Misty, I believe.
You're wrong.
No?
You're wrong. No,
Jesse?
She was Brock.
No, she actually played like side characters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sure it was non-union, whoever it was.
Oh, yeah. They got nothing for that movie. So this episode is a parody of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and I will tell everybody here, like Matt Groening, I've never seen it in full.
Whoa.
I've seen clips from it. I know what happens in it, but I never sat down and said, I'm going to watch this movie all the way through, because it was just always on TV in the 90s and I would catch like 20 minutes of it at a time. So eventually I will see it all the way through, but this is a thorough parody of the movie, and I don't need to have seen the movie to understand all the jokes.
No, you don't. I mean, I watched Willy Wonka 80 times, probably. I think at least 3 times in school. It was one of the go-to VHSs in my school. Just like, well, The John Mulaney joke is that when teachers are hungover, that's when they show VHS tapes in class.
Oh, yeah.
But, that's when I saw it, because especially in an English class, you're like, well, it's based on a book, so you're learning when you're watching this movie.
Yeah, they avoided a lot of very, I think, obvious jokes here to satirize Willy Wonka. Like the proxy character for Willy Wonka does not have a song.
Yeah, that's true.
There's no, none of that.
We just get the Grunkalunkas.
That's right. And they didn't do any like Professor Farnsworth as Grandpa Joe or anything like that.
So yeah, they don't.
They have some restraint here, and I appreciate
that. They don't project all of the characters onto the people. Mm-hmm. It's they find something else to do with it. I am so tired of Willy Wonka parodies. But it's around 1999 is when the generation. So the guys who wrote The Simpsons, they didn't give a shit about Willy Wonka. They didn't grow up with it. If it came out when they were kids, they were probably like 15 or something. They didn't care. But the generation that grew up with Willy Wonka, they were finally making comedy. So they all had to do the same jokes
at the same time
about belches in a bubble factory, about how wasn't that a crazy boat ride at the middle of that movie? Isn't that trippy, man?
But you're mentioning we're talking about Family Guy, right? I mean,
it's not just Family Guy. Everybody
but
did it.
It was notable in that it was an animated show on Fox that also did a Willy Wonka parody. So their parody, it was called Wasted Talent. It aired that summer later. Yeah, the summer of 2000.
Is that like every episode title?
Wasted Talent. Well, I guess some people on the show are talented. But I mean, it's a very different parody, but it's also, it doesn't go as far as this in terms of trying hard. I mean, the one thing I can remember in that is like the Willy Wonka or the Oompa Loompa stand-ins sing a song to Joe, the character in a wheelchair, and the entire song is about how God doesn't exist because he's disabled. It's all making fun of him being disabled, which is yeah. which is a hilarious Family Guy
very
joke.
Funny.
Yeah,
they go there, man.
Yeah, no, those disabled people take them down a peg.
Well, Family Guy is more of a musical loving show than Futurama 2, so they parody multiple songs in it. They do line jokes over and over again of just like, I bet the ticket makes the beer taste terrible. Like many more direct pulls of lines from it, which I guess is a more thorough parody of it. But
Jeremy shaking
I'm
his
shaking
head.
My head. No, that's just like, I feel like, you know, directly satirizing or referencing a line from the original, like doing it over and over again. That's not you know, heavy lifting. That's actually the opposite.
It proves reading comprehension. You have to admit that.
Like, well, yeah. I know a lot of movies, you know, line for line, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that I'm going to write a satire of them that is just me regurgitating that with like one or two words altered. That's not good.
No, yeah. I will give credit. Sorry.
Oh no, go ahead.
I will give credit to that episode. That is where the Peter falling down and grabbing his shin joke premiered.
Oh yeah,
it's his "I've got a golden ticket, run home" thing. But then he falls and holds his shin for a long time. Like,
it's the joke so nice they used it several more times.
I mean, it's easy filler. Like they got. Bob, it's hard to write comedy shows.
They've already got those drawings. Just shove them in there. But this episode, it begins with the immortal and the inimitable Slurms McKenzie.
Honey unit, I'm home. Monique!
Calculon!
Oh, how I wish I could believe that. You may be my evil half-brother, but there's no law against murdering the other half!
All my circuits will be right back after this word from Slurm. It's highly addictive.
Look, it's Slurms McKenzie.
He's the original party worm. Ooh.
Whimmy wham wham wazzle, let's party.
I love that.
Look at that worm go. Who says there are no more heroes?
Hey, dudes! You can win a chance to party with me, Slurms McKenzie, at the Slurm Bottling Plant on Planet Wormula.
Just look for the golden bottle cap inside specially marked cans of Slurm.
I won!
No purchase necessary unless you wish to enter the contest. Odds of winning mathematically insignificant.
Yes, so Slurms McKenzie, we don't, at the beginning of the episode, you don't know about his fate or what they're doing to him, but there's a sense of desperation in his voice. The planet Wormulon! I just love how it feels like there's a gun being held at him off screen or something.
Yeah,
I appreciate the fact that this episode basically begins with Fry watching TV, which makes it a great carryover from his television addiction in the previous episode when aliens attack.
That's the start of a lot of like Simpsons episodes too. Like the TV parody will start the episode. Like it will either make a thematic thing or give the Simpsons something to do.
And I had missed All My Circuits. I love All My Circuits. Every joke on it, like Calculon, is so great every time. He's such a actor.
Yeah, I think this hooks up to, I didn't go back and look at it, but I think this hooks up to what happened in iRoommate. Like all the relationships are,
it's still
carried over.
Brother,
yeah.
They, but there's a mega twist every 10 minutes on that show. And, but the Slurm, finally seeing Slurm pay off in its own episode was something I've been waiting so long, and it's an original viewer for. I'm just like, I'm seeing Slurm everywhere. It's the Duff of the show.
The tagline is, it's addictive. It's always been that, even before this episode.
Yeah, it had been appearing since the first episode when he gets into Times Square and sees the future. There's giant Slurm billboard right there. As surprisingly, like, it took The Simpsons, I think, to season 4 before Homer goes to the Duff Factory.
Yeah, Duffless.
Yeah.
We're missing the biggest, the bull terrier in the room, as it were. That is Spuds McKenzie, the famous Bud Light spokesdog, who only existed from 1987 to 1989. And I do have a clip of one of his more famous commercials.
Check him out.
What a hug.
Get a load of him.
With a beach in sight and a cold Bud Light, he's in the party frenzy.
He's Spuds McKenzie, what party loving happening dude.
Go, go Spuds, go Spuds, go.
Is that actually Robin Leach?
I think so, yeah.
Go Spuds, go Spuds, go.
So yeah, Spuds McKenzie. Oh man, there's another one starting. We got to back out of this. So Spuds McKenzie, the cool dog. He not only drinks beer, he gets laid. Women are all over this dog. It's a very confusing image.
And he wears a Hawaiian shirt.
He does. He wears the exact same shirt that Slurms does. It's a Hawaiian shirt with flowers on it. And sunglasses too.
I forgot the Robin Leach aspect of the Spuds McKenzie ads, that you needed him, the lifestyle's a rich and famous guy, to announce how awesome Spuds is, because you wouldn't know it exactly unless it was told to you by Robin.
This fabulous dog drinks light beer.
We put a shirt on a dog. It's very strange. So this thing was a huge phenomenon. I can remember
like that song. Like I could have sung along with it as you played it, not having seen it in many years.
Wow.
I did not remember, you know, because I was a kid when it was last aired, that it was like the song is a satire of the Beach Boys.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, Spuds was very much the original. So the tagline is the original party animal. And I like how on the nose the Slurms McKenzie thing is, and that his name is Slurms McKenzie, and he's the original party worm. I think the joke is they didn't have to reach very far for that.
It's a one-to-one replacement.
They didn't want to dress it up much, you know.
You see, on fucking Family Guy, they would have just said Spuds McKenzie, except he's gay.
That's the joke.
Or something. Yeah,
except he's gay. So it's a very common Family Guy joke. But yes, more. I did a lot of research on Spuds. There's a lot of information out there. Some of it's true. It's the dog's actually a lady dog, or a bitch, if you will.
Whoa.
I gotta call the dictionary people about that. It was a dog named Honey Tree Evil Eye. That was the name of that dog. Wow. A very cool name for a dog.
Was the evil eye because of the ring?
I think so. Yeah,
like, fur pattern around her eye.
That was cute. Not makeup.
I wonder, did they get rid of the Spuds campaign because it was too like?
Yes,
it seems
exactly.
For children,
yeah,
right?
It was a very Joe Camel kind of thing. This was around the same time that Joe Camel was like pushed out of the media spotlight, and they said, "Hey, maybe don't advertise your death sticks to children."
I remember being excited about Spuds McKenzie as a kid, not knowing what beer was or what it tasted like. I was just like, "Oh, a cool dog! He's gonna skateboard and like there's bikini girls and stuff."
The only reason he did not star in a Sega Genesis game is because. You know, beer. That it was just too
That's
hard
true.
To make that case.
Mm-hmm. Man, he would have been like with Buster Douglas and Tommy Lasorda, one of the early Genesis stars. Mm-hmm. Spud's Adventure.
And him and Socks the Cat could have rocked the hill.
Oh boy,
but
God.
This didn't make me want to try Bud Light though as a kid. Though the Bud Bowl did make me want to try Budweiser, which then once I finally had it, I'm like, this is piss. Like Budweiser's the worst.
You gotta pour salt in it so it doesn't taste as bad. That's the trick.
Is that the trick? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and one of the bikini ladies, Pam Anderson.
That's right. right. She'll show up later in this episode too for another line.
They hang around for a fish full of dollars, and so they just were like, "Could you record again? We've got a we've got a bikini girl in this. I think you're probably a good fit for."
Oh, that's, done this. That's Pam Anderson in this episode.
So the blonde associate
party
of
girl.
Spuds. There you go, party girl. So I'm trying to think of a non-insulting way to say this, but
model.
Oh, a floozy, if you will. No, I wouldn't say that. But I do like the idea, the idea of a bottle cap inside of a can is really funny.
I love that. The winning bottle cap inside of a can, that they don't sell them in bottles anymore.
And the last joke before the opening is Fry's teeth falling out, which, as we've seen in future episodes, it's very easy to get things replaced in the future, like your hands or your nose.
Yes. I love his pile of cans and his almost equal pile of teeth as well. Like, in just one sitting, he must replace teeth every morning for Fry, I'm guessing.
And I know Henry is not a soda fan, based on our conversations over the years, but this is a time when I was drinking nothing but soda. No water would ever touch my lips, so I was very much like Fry. It wasn't until, like, I think the early 2000s where I just stopped drinking soda altogether, and now I have, like, a Coke a month, and that's basically it. And Jeremy's nodding.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up drinking soda, and then sometime in high school, I was like, this is a lot of sugar. Maybe I should not drink it. And so I stopped drinking regular soda, and then for the other, like, you know, for just as long of my life, I drank diet soda, which wasn't any healthier. But, like, after I broke away from regular soda, like, I cannot drink regular soda. It's so sweet.
Yeah.
Like, a couple of years, I went back and tried to have a Coke, and was just like,
ginger
I gotta
beer.
I have my weird chemicals.
Non-alcoholic ginger beer, or alcoholic if you want. That's really good. That's better kind of soda. It's
ginger
not super
beer is
sweet.
So good with bourbon and mint.
I like it with rum. It's called a dark and stormy. That's really good. But
I'm more a Kentucky Mule kind of guy.
I did not have a third heart attack, but I was drinking a lot of like. I swear to God, like, in high school, my lunch was a can of Coke and a Hostess apple pie every day.
Nice.
But I think it wasn't the health reasons. I was still skinny drinking a million Cokes, but it was like, if I go out to eat, my meal will be $3 less, and I'm really poor, so I just won't order a soda with my meal.
I always laughed at my friends when I would order water at, say, Wendy's and be like, see, mine was $3 less than yours, or I could buy three more things from the dollar menu since I didn't get a dumb soda like you. I just never liked soda because it was the carbonation. It just has never has agreed with me. Never liked it. I mean, it's not to say that I didn't eat. Like, I drank a lot of Kool-Aid and fruit punch, so it's not that I stayed away from sugary drinks. It was more just the bubbles. I look back on the soda consumption of my brother. He was a major soda drinker. And my poor parents, I'm just going to say my mom, because she did the grocery shopping, like, she would buy like a 32 pack of like two 32 packs of Dr. Pepper a week. And then when we had more friends coming over all the time, she was like, she had to spend a good chunk of money on soda for everybody. Cause it was like, well, we got to have soda in the fridge. Mom, our friends are over playing video games.
What are they going to drink out of the toilet?
You know, these commercials, we got to have sodas in the fridge. No purple stuff or Sunny D.
I've moved on to just unsweetened black coffee every hour of the day. And I look down on people that put too much sugar in coffee. I was actually at my coffee place by my apartment, and a guy was just like, just had the sugar thing overturned and was like rotating it around the coffee. I was like, I'm going to look away. He better be done by the time I look back. When I look back, I'm like, he's still doing it.
Good Lord.
He's still doing it.
Just eat a candy bar. Just have some M&Ms instead.
Go to Starbucks and get a milkshake. It's the same thing. But yes, so Bender is sick, and Dr. Zoidberg has a diagnosis for him.
I'll have a look, but I remind you, I'm an expert on humans, not robots.
I'm not Bender. I'm Fry.
Really? I thought you were the robot.
Nope. Human.
All right. Spare me your life story. Now, what seems to be the trouble?
My tummy hurts, and I've been having this burning electrical discharge.
Don't worry, you'll be fine.
Oh, boy.
I didn't have the heart to tell him. It's fin fungus. He'll be floating upside down by morning.
So we get some classic season one Zoidberg jokes. He's a bad doctor, and everything is fish-related.
And he says, robot.
Robots, yeah. I love robot.
I lost many fish to fish fungus. We had a fin fungus in an outbreak of that. And you just learn not to get attached to fish. You're just like, all right, I got attached to the first two of you guys, but you're interchangeable now. You're nothing to me. I did like the gag of the...
You monster.
I did like the gag of the temperature, like her burning herself on his 900-degree yeah. head.
And the entire couch just explodes when Bender lays down on it, too. Yeah.
Oh, and in the opening, I forgot to mention...
Oh, the cartoon.
The cartoon, instead of being like Betty Boop or a Looney Tune, it is the Simpsons short, the 9th short, Making Faces. That
How'd
is
they
the
get
one.
The rights to that?
I don't know. I mean, we did fail to ask David Silverman about the rights issues with that or why you can't buy the shorts anywhere.
Now people ask us that question. I don't know why. I mean, I guess we pose as experts, but that no one knows that answer to that question.
Bill Oakley didn't know the answer yeah. to that question. So, but maybe if we ever get David Silverman online again, that's my first question.
So Dr. Farnsworth gets the F-ray to look through Bender, and I love how he has the full radiation suit. Everyone else has goggles on, and it kind of reminds me like when you go to the dentist and they give you an X-ray. They give you a tiny bib, and the dentist like goes to another room.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll be over here behind this wall.
And I love the line, you might feel a slight stinging sensation. All of you.
But I think Jeremy might have something to say. Bender has a 6502 chip in his brain.
He does,
and
yes.
Can you talk about that?
Well, the 6502, I mean, how much detail do you want me to go into? It was a very common processor. The Nintendo Entertainment System, the Apple II, I think the VIC-20, lots and lots of computers in the 80s especially, ran on the MOS 6502. And so the joke there is that Bender's brain is a 1970s piece of technology.
They do linger on it for just like a half of a second, just for all the nerds out there to be like, I get it. Yeah, I do like that. But I did get it having read, what's the name of that book? I Am Error. Like, they talk a lot about that chip in the, it's a book about the inner workings of the NES. It's very interesting, but also very dry.
Also, just so you know that this show is written by science dorks, they spend a bit of time shitting over homeopathic remedies. I'm just saying,
yeah.
Why not just get a big fat placebo?
All the same crap.
So telling a robot to have like homeopathic, yeah, echinacea. But yes, it turns out Bender is sick because he has Amy's watch in his gears. Those gears just disappear like a second later.
They open and close. That gears in the same scene had already had his temperature in there. And I also love the coloring on him just changes a little bit. He's slightly greener when he's sick.
And he doesn't learn a lesson because he steals her earrings immediately afterwards and then coughs. So it's like he learned nothing. And I love the joke. It's like Farnsworth gives them the F-ray. Don't let it fall into the wrong hands. He places it into both of
their
hands.
And that's the scene.
Yeah, I really, really like that.
Literally framed that way. And then they just cackle with enjoyment. Bender, because he's going to use it to steal things. Fry, just out of like chaotic excitement, I think.
Yes, we
he's
do get
chaotic neutral.
There is a fun montage with the F-ray. There is like kind of a sketchy transphobic joke.
Not a fan of that.
Of the era. I mean, I think we've all had our opinions changed and have been enlightened.
I am glad that the trans robot gets the last laugh on Bender in that it doesn't just end with like ew.
It's not as bad as what we saw on The Critic with he doesn't know I'm actually a man. You know.
And that it actually has one of my favorite lines from all of Futurama. Why are you so stupid?
Yeah, even the robot.
It's just such a blunt and
yeah.
I don't know.
The robot
really
snaps too, right?
I mean,
like
it's
robot
a Rosie
snaps.
Perez bot.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of The Critic,
my God,
she's off to eat electricity with William Shatner.
William Shatner is eating electricity. Also that Fry feeling himself sterilized is great. It's not just that he's like, ow, my crotch, ow, my sperm.
Yeah, he can sense his sperm being damaged. But it doesn't
hurt the second time.
It really doesn't. Good for Fry, though. We don't need more Fries in the world. But doesn't he have to knock up his grandma
in
the future? In the past?
Well,
F-Ray must be a temporary...
I hope
so. Also, though, I mean, he got his hands destroyed and fixed.
Yeah.
At some point off screen, perhaps his genitals were destroyed and replaced with working sperm.
He went to Sperm Crafters. New sperm in an hour.
Nanomachines, son.
Okay, yeah, nanomachines.
Well, actually, he did have his own version of nanomachines and fixed his balls.
Yep. Whoa, yeah.
That were the
and
worms.
His brains.
Not only do we know that he makes sperm again because Zoidberg rides his sperm in that episode.
Oh, right.
You never guess
right.
where I've been.
Oh, that's great.
That's right.
So, boom. There's actually in continuity explanations
for
the return of his sperm.
The toilet sandwich fixes the F-ray's damage.
So eat the toilet sandwich, everybody, if you're having problems conceiving. So it takes a long time for Fry to come up with the connecting the F-ray to finding the bottle cap. Here it is right here.
Man, all this prolonged exposure to radiation is making me thirsty. Ah, if only there was some way of knowing which can had the winning bottle cap inside.
Oh, what?
I didn't hear you. I was too busy using this F-ray to look inside of things.
Wait a second. I'm getting an idea. No. False alarm. No, yeah, no, yeah, no, wait, no, yeah, no, no. Yes!
So, unfortunately, they don't find one. I like how what happens to Fry at the end of this act, like, it makes everything that happened before meaningless.
The entire first act is just a complete wild goose chase that has no point because he stumbles across the bottle cap on his own.
From a storytelling standpoint, this has the similar funny issue of the actual Willy Wonka movie and other adaptations of that book, the Roald Dahl book, which is... You know, as a reader, if you're reading about this man, this boy named Charlie, who is in the title and the chocolate factory, you're waiting for him to get that golden ticket because you know there's no reason you'd be following his story if he doesn't get the golden ticket. So you're just counting down, like, when's he going to get this golden ticket? Like, let's speed this shit up. Same deal here. You know that Fry has to win it because he's the main character of a TV show.
Okay, but on the other hand, in this one, they're antagonizing a child and destroying the Goodyear blimp and so on and so forth. So there's lots of comedy along the way that it makes it seem less of a, like,
oh no, I love it. In the Willy Wonka movies, especially in the Tim Burton one, when I saw it, I was just like, can you just speed this up? Like,
oh man, I forgot about that. I did want to bring that up though, because I think it's been forgotten. In some cases, the remake often overwrites the old movie for a new generation. Like, I were talking about The Grinch for some reason before this recording, and I think people, that's a holiday movie now that people watch, the Ron Howard Grinch. Yeah.
Really? No,
yeah.
I always still see the original cartoon.
It's just,
I mean,
like,
no one's ever going to top James Earl Jones singing about The Grinch.
James Earl Jones?
Oh, wait,
yeah.
That's Thurl Ravenscroft.
James Earl Jones is in that.
I know I'm right, Jeremy. Okay. He's going to pull out his phone and check. But that movie, it's sort of like how I'm getting older and don't understand young people, where it's like there's nostalgia for things I am horrified about, like Space Jam. People are like, yeah, Space Jam's cool. Mm. Like, wait, I watched that when I was 15 and I hated it.
It came at the right time, I think.
When
they come in right before he drinks the bottle cap, that they're playing three-dimensional Scrabble. Instead of 3D, it's the same setup as 3D chess from Star Trek, but it's three-dimensional Scrabble. And the professor's tiles almost say Futurama.
Oh, yeah. But I like how needless that element of it is, the 3D version of it. But, yeah, so this Fry chokes on the bottle cap. This put this nightmarish image in my head for life. I always think of this because it seems like the worst thing to choke on. Like, the way it will just get lodged in your throat because it's all jagged. It's like a jagged circle.
Cutting your throat up as it's there, too. Death is imminent.
So, well, Jeremy, what's the verdict?
The verdict is I'm wrong, and the internet had lied to me.
Wow.
That's
what I get
for believing the internet.
I wouldn't blame you for thinking that because it is a very deep
voice.
No,
I had read it. Yeah. And so then the last time I listened to the song, I was like, oh, huh, wow, amazing.
You have to track down that wiki editor and give him a noogie or something.
Jerk ass.
So they make it to the planet Wormulon.
Did you notice the ship still has the laser cannon from the last
episode?
Oh,
really? Okay.
It's an interesting... it could just be a mistake, but I think maybe it is them trying to have just more continuity like the Simpsons would not have.
I'd like to ask our listeners, though, if you're out there and have a lot of free time on your hands, count the amount of times in this episode they say slurm or some variation on slurm, including slurms, because I swear to God, they just enjoy putting the word slurm in the script. I think they say it 80 times in this episode. It happens a lot, but here is them meeting Glurmo.
Welcome to the planet Wormulon. I'm Glurmo, your gullyrific guide to the splentacular slurm factory. Uh-huh. Can we have our free slurm now? You'll have all the slurm you can drink later on when you're partying with my good friend, Slurms McKenzie.
All right! Wimmy wham wham wazzle! Lay some skin on me, dudes!
Wow! The original party worm! Are you ready to get down, get funky with us?
He'd better be. That's what we pay him for, right, Slurms?
Right!
In fact, Slurms has to party all night every night, or he's fired.
Rock on!
But before the party, you're all in for a wonderful treat. A VIP tour of the Slurm Factory.
Enjoy the tour, dudes!
I'm going to go lie down.
You know, Glurmo is a terrible villain because not only does he give away the secret agreement with Slurms, he's always talking about the secret ingredient of Slurm. Like, he wants to be found out. He wants to be caught. He's not very good at his job.
I think Glurmo just likes to brag. He's just like, well, what are you going to do? You're on my planet. You're idiots. Like, I don't care. And people seem to be fine with, like, basically slavery in most jobs in his future too. I also like that Glurmo is not, he dresses like Willy Wonka, and I think Billy West is trying a little bit for a Gene Wilder impression.
I think it's pretty good. It gets that like sinister Gene Wilder.
But he's not singing songs. He's not trying to do tricks. He's not really an entertainer. He's just kind of a dick.
Yeah. He just runs a tour.
And then also that Fry, the second he gets there, he's like, Fry doesn't want a tour. He's like, can we just have our free Slurm now? He's like, after the tour, like over and over again, he's like, no, we're doing this tour. It's almost like them being insistent, like, we're doing a Willy Wonka parody here. You're not going to cut to the chase.
It's funny. All Fry wants to do is drink Slurm. He could do that at home for the cost of Slurm. He just need to be on Wormulon. I guess partying with Slurms McKenzie is the main appeal, but he just wants to drink the Slurm.
Well, I assume it's because it's free, so it'll save him some cash.
That is true, but God.
He I must love have a little animation of Fry getting the mucus on his hand from Slurm shaking his
wiping
hand.
On his pants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great.
So they go on the tour. We do meet the Grunkalunkas. Again, just like with Slurms McKenzie, I like how they didn't try to make a parody name. It's just like, we're naming it this so you know what we're doing. That's basically the joke with the Grunkalunkas. And immediately the professor's like, tell them I hate them. I love that.
That's another one of my favorite lines from Futurama.
Is that line in the towel?
No, I mean, I don't have it in the clip, but I love it because everyone immediately hates the Grunkalunkas before they can do anything. Leela calls them disgusting little men.
I was fine with the Oompa Loompas. I liked them in the original Willy Wonka. I mean, even more so in the book, because I did read the original book as a kid. It is totally colonialism. Mm-hmm. Like, the story is that Willy Wonka goes to an indigenous people and tricks them into working in his factory, and he's just like, well, they won't steal my secrets like other people. It's like, so because they're slaves and they don't leave, like, but they're simple people, they don't know it, they're fine,
they enjoy the work.
There's a lot of problems with Roald Dahl's writing.
Oh yes.
I agree. I even though I love him, but it's like, if you were on a tour and you notice all the workers are little people forced to dress the same way.
I think it's not a coincidence that they are immediately like physically revolted by these tiny men who are orange and have super blonde hair.
How big are their
hands?
What
does that remind you of?
Actually, their hands might be as big as the guy you're talking about.
Not proportionally, but measurement.
Yes.
Get ready for some fun.
It's Futurama the game!
Take control of Fry.
What exactly do you know how to do?
Bender.
I laugh at your pain.
Leela.
Prepare for liftoff.
And
Dr. Zoidberg? What are you doing here?
Making a cameo.
On an action-packed adventure across the galaxy. Face terrifying enemies. And make new friends.
Greetings, you aliens from other planet.
As you seek to battle the evil mom.
Sweet, butt crossed on a cracker.
It was so funny.
In this new Futurama adventure for the PlayStation 2 and Xbox.
I guess you had to be there.
Rated T for teen.
So we go on the tour, and Glurmo is talking about how Slurm is made. Again, count the amount of words, times he used the word Slurm in this.
As we sail down the river of Slurm, you'll see our mixologists at work. They take 900 of the finest ingredients add a touch of childlike delight, and mix it all with glacial spring water from our glacial spring water generator. Then, last of all, we add the secret ingredient that makes Slurm so deliciously addictive. So, what's the secret ingredient? It's whatever your imagination wants it to be. Oh, well, what is it really? That's not for you to know.
And people keep asking him about the secret ingredient after that. He shouldn't have mentioned it. Like, yeah. when he talks about the berries, Bender's like, is that the secret ingredient? Because it seems like it is.
I love the sensually massaging berries.
Yeah.
It's quite an imagery
as well.
To release
their flavor.
The Wumpus berries.
And even Glermo doesn't want them to sing. When they sing the first time, he's like, hey, get back to work.
They enjoy the songs. But yes, here is the first Grunkalunka song.
The disgusting little men are starting to sing.
Grunka lunka dunka dee doo, we've got a friendly warning for you. Grunka lunka dunka dee daisis, the secret of Slurm's on a need-to-know basis.
Asking questions in school is a great way to learn.
If you try that stuff here, you might get your legs broke.
We once found a dead guy face down in the Slurm.
It could easily happen again to you folks.
So keep your head down and keep your mouth shut. Grunka lunka lunka dunka dee dot.
Hey, I don't pay you to sing. You just used up today's bathroom break.
Hard ass.
I heard that.
It's like they work at Amazon or something. But that's great. I love how it's just like the Oompa Loompa song in a minor key, but it's all about how if you ask questions, you'll get killed. We've seen dead bodies on this tour. It's great.
They're admitting to seeing corpses.
But that song is in my head. I was singing in the shower today. We've once found a dead guy face down in the Slurm. It's great. Where are we now? Sorry.
Oh, and I love how little they work for a rhyme in it, too. Grunka lunka dunka dee dee daisis.
Daisis.
Yeah. Daisis.
Darmgard.
Darmgard is coming up. But actually, the clip a few clips ago is not the one that was like overloaded with Slurm. It's Fry is thirsty. It's like he checks the Slurm and then he checks it some more. And all Fry wants to do is drink Slurm on this tour.
He's dying for it.
But yes, we do learn that they're basically slaves because Hermes is like, how can I get some of these guys working for me? They think they have a good union, but they don't.
That's another of my favorite lines, is just the idea of like, they think that thinking they have a good union, but they don't, and then saying they're basically slaves, which you should just say that about the Oompa Loompas. They are basically slaves.
That could be a commentary on the book, now that I think about
it,
more than the movie.
Yeah.
but yes, it's a great little bit of Fry logic where he's like, if I jump in the river, I can drink all the Slurm I want. He jumps in, help, I can't swim. He realizes that isn't Slurm that he's swimming in. So I believe they're washed into the factory then at that point.
Yeah, well, so he drops in, Leela goes to help him, and then Bender just jumps in too because everyone else is ready.
He's got to go along with the crowd.
As we saw in Hell's Other Robots, he's not immune to peer pressure, Bender.
He loves peer pressure.
There wasn't even peer pressure there. It was just like he saw other people doing, he had FOMO. He was just like, I got to go.
That looks like fun.
And at some point, Fry does learn how to swim because in the Atlanta episode, he definitely swims in that one. I don't think we ever saw him need to swim in a previous episode before this one, so it's not the Henry discontinuity alert. Here,
I'm glad you were watching out for that, but I did neglect the second Grunkalunka song.
Hey, what's behind that door?
Nothing.
Is it the secret ingredient?
Grunkalunka dunkity ingredient. You should not ask about the secret ingredient.
Okay, we get the point.
I was just curious because of the armed guards.
Grunkalunka dunkity darm guards.
Shut the hell up!
I love how angry Bender is on that line reading. Shut the hell up!
Is that a line of the episode?
It is for me. Let's do it, yeah.
Oh, wait, you're serious? Let me laugh even harder.
Just the inexplicable revulsion everyone has towards the Grunkalunkas. They hate them on sight. They want them to shut up.
No character likes them.
Yeah.
They're all just Leela without even hearing, before they even sing, she's just like, the disgusting little men are going to do something. Ugh.
And so they get washed into the factory after this point, right?
Yes, yeah, so they get pulled behind the scenes and they find out that it's a fake factory that they were seeing.
Yeah, and something is rotten on the planet Wormulon.
I love the animation, though, of Fry squeezing his pompadour into his mouth. It reaches that far in front of him.
He wants the Slurm that much. But yes, here is them finding out about the secret factory and the real factory.
This all must have something to do with the secret ingredient.
My God, what if the secret ingredient is people?
No, there's already a soda like that. Soylent Cola.
Oh, how is it?
It varies from person to person.
It's a good silent, so a good Soylent Green joke.
I actually think that would be the line of the episode.
That's Jeremy's private line of the episode,
yes,
so we'll give it to him.
Oh, right.
We have two lines of the show.
Oh, wait, you serious?
Bring it all
Let me laugh even harder.
That's what happens when you get all these powerful podcasters in one room. We can't agree on anything, but the next scene is they're all in a gift shop. I think the only joke in there is Amy slipping and falling on Glormo's slime.
Small, medium, large, and mutant. The shirt sizes, that's a joke.
And Zoidberg is getting a shirt with...
It's in Hebrew.
Hebrew, yes.
Oh,
it's Hebrew.
Oh,
it says Slurm in Hebrew. Well,
oh, my goodness.
I'm assuming it says Slurm.
Again, Henry thinks all Jews are lizard people.
No.
That's part of the canon of Talking Simpsons and Talking Futurama.
but Glermo's going away like... If you'll excuse me, just his walk away is great.
Yeah, I do like how sinister he is.
It's a well-observed Disney-style gift shop, too, which I think I've taught. Oh, also, though, is anybody, even though I don't drink soda, I've been to the Coke bottle, Coke tour in Atlanta.
I think that's
Coke
because
factory.
You were close to Atlanta, right?
Yeah, we lived in Atlanta. If you're gonna live there long enough, you got to go to the Coke factory at least once.
I've never been. I've never been to the South, actually, ever.
Yeah, I mean, if you're ever in Atlanta, the Coke Museum's a fun little thing.
Not that I wouldn't want to go to the South. I just have not had the... Although we might be at Anime Weekend Atlanta, the Retronauts
so,
crew.
Tour time. Or we could do like Jack Daniels or something. I haven't been to a Coke factory, but I have been to distilleries, which... And wineries. Yeah, that's more me.
The Atlanta Coke Factory is more of a museum / celebration of all things Coke. And you can get every flavor of Coke that's anywhere on the planet there. Or this is all true statements for 1992, folks. I haven't been there since then.
I'm sure it's still doing its thing.
Yeah, I would bet it's probably the same. But I mean, you know, it's cute and all. My favorite thing, it was no fun, I guess, the drinking of things, because I was like, but this is all carbonated. I don't want to drink this.
Do they have like a secret stash of New Coke? Secreted away?
No, I think you could get New Coke there. I think it was on tap.
Unfortunately, the association with Bill Cosby means they have to get rid of all the New Coke.
Well, they changed the name to Coke 2, so it's
Coke
okay.
Coke 2, okay. So there was no sex pervert assigned to that product, I guess.
But this episode is great how it transitions from Willy Wonka to Soylent Green.
It's very good, yeah. It's they are doing way more with it than Family Guy did.
Yeah.
I mean, does it transition to Soylent Green? Like, I haven't actually seen Soylent Green, so I don't know. Like the underground stuff is meant to be a riff on that. It's more like body horror to me.
It does that in that the secret ingredient of something is something horrible, and that everyone needs to know about it, and someone's trying to stop someone from telling the world about the secret ingredients.
It's exposing what the factory is like. The going behind the door and seeing what the factory is in the film Soylent Green, it is seeing literal corpses on you know, going into the making the food. So, and it is a shocking revelation, similar to seeing shit going into a worm slime going into a slurm can.
Yeah, I'd rather eat humans than like the worm queen
secretions.
Yeah, but let's hear it. Yeah, so Fry finally gets Slurm and learns the horrible secret of Slurm all in the same scene.
Look, Slurm! Finally! Oh, yeah. I'm never going 12 minutes without a slurm again.
It's the end of the line. This must be where they put in the secret ingredient.
Well, whatever it is, it's even better fresh. Mmm. Still warm.
Ugh. Warm soda.
Yeah. Ah, lordy!
Fry! Fry!
Can't stop drinking it. That's
it's
a great
same
act break.
Take on Fry. Yeah. Too. I like that.
Well, I think Jeremy was about to tear his headphones off from those gross,
sound
like splattering
effects,
sounds.
Like, just divorced from the visuals?
Yeah. they're very
Some
well
real
done.
Real misophonia right there. Yeah, the gag with Fry being unable to stop drinking this horrible concoction, even though he's seen the evidence of what it is right there. like that really speaks to, I think, the addictive nature of not just soda, but like anything that you get hooked on. Like, you know it's terrible, but you just can't stop yourself.
Yeah, it's just like, almost like a lizard brain sort of reaction. Yeah, like I'm just going to put it in my
so
mouth.
True. I mean, on the way over here, I had this very bad coffee, and I was like, I had to throw it away. But at the same time, I was like, but I need some more caffeine. So I was like having a fry moment right there, sipping this bad coffee.
I had a similar moment of that in my 20s where I baked some cookies for like a group thing, but I mostly kept the cookies for myself to eat during the week. But after I had the first batch, they gave me a very upset tummy, I'll just say that. And but when it came time to either throw out the cookies or eat them again, I convinced myself of like, it couldn't have been these cookies, not these delicious cookies right in front of me. Eat them again, have the same trouble. And I hope that I think I threw them away after the second chance I gave them.
I continue to drink coffee even after I've had too much, so I have a Jeremy problem as well. But so Glormo appears again, and we learn the horrible secret of Slurm.
Well, my curious friends, you learn the secret of Slurm. That concludes the portion of the tour where you stay alive.
You wish, you slimy worm. Hi-ya!
Oh, good work, Glormo. You have pleased your queen.
Thank you, Your Majesty.
Thanks, ma'am.
How can you trick people into drinking something that comes out of your behind? It's disgusting.
Is it? Honey comes from a bee's behind, milk comes from a cow's behind, and have you ever used toothpaste?
Whose behind does that come from?
You don't want to know.
I do enjoy the Slurm Queen's "You and I are the same" speech because it's wrong. It's like honey does not come from a bee's behind.
They vomit it.
Yes, and
which is also bad. But
milk is also not cow shit. Sorry, no, not to mean to interrupt.
It's not. Yeah. It is. I like that Calvin and Hobbes gag they had once of like, who looked at a cow's udder the first time and thought, I'm going to drink what comes out of this.
But I mean, I don't know what's in toothpaste, but there is like this one additive in food that comes from like beaver anuses or something like that. Yeah, it's very strange. It's in a lot of stuff. Or
the
like
best coffee comes from weasel crap.
Weasel crap, yeah. Or there's a cat kind of
civet
coffee. Yeah, you told me that when we started working together, it went up, and I didn't believe you because it sounds made up.
It is not made up, and that coffee is delicious.
Weasel crap coffee. I'm gonna try some when I get a chance.
I love the gag that after the commercial, Fry is still doing the drinking stuff, but Leela's not even reacting anymore. She doesn't yell at him for Fry. She just knocks it out of his hand, like, you're just going to keep drinking. I gotta take matters in my own hands here. And it's such a great twist that they could have just said the secret ingredient added to other things is worm slime. But it's only that.
That's
Slurm
it, yeah.
is only that.
It's basically just royal jelly.
It's so sugary. So speaking of new Coke, we find out what's going to happen to Leela.
As for you, you will be submerged in royal Slurm, which in a matter of minutes will transform you into a Slurm queen like myself.
But your highness, she's a commoner. Her Slurm will taste foul.
Yes. Which is why we'll market it as new Slurm. Then, when everyone hates it, we'll bring back Slurm Classic and make billions.
People just can't make new Coke jokes anymore. I think this is the last possible time in history in which a new Coke joke could have been made.
No one's alive anymore.
That was more than 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It was like, 84, 85? I vaguely remember drinking a new Coke at some point as a small child.
Those who lived through it probably don't even remember the taste much anymore.
It was pretty much Pepsi.
Okay. I guess it's easy to remember.
When they announced they were changing the formula, my aunt had a can of original Coke that she just kept on her shelf, not to drink, just like as a sad reminder of what was lost.
we'll never have it again.
Sorry, I had the same for the Atlanta Olympics, where it was the Atlanta Olympics and those commemorative Coke cans. I save those for everything, and these Coke cans are limited edition. They're going to be worth a ton someday.
So yeah, Leela is going to be a Slurm queen. Bender is going to be made into Slurm cans. We learned that Slurm cans are made from old robots and Hell's other... a big piece of garbage. Mm-hmm. And Fry is free to rescue his friends, but he is also given a trough of super Slurm that he can't pull himself away from. And this is him attempting to rescue everybody while drinking the super Slurm.
I can't stop eating this delicious ooze, but I'm not going to let you die.
So he's dragging it with him to rescue Leela.
Hurry!
What's happening?
just in time.
There's a giant hole punched in Bender.
And he has no gears inside.
That's true. Where'd the gears go? They were so important to Act 1.
So that's a classic villain 101, though, that the villains are like, they just laugh and leave. Yeah. They had just watched them and for a few more minutes.
They also tell you what's going to happen, like every step of the plan. Yeah,
it's right out of Batman 66. I do love that in another show, it would have been Fry breaking it and being like, no, I have the willpower, but Fry does not have that willpower.
Yeah.
If it were Batman 66, there would have been a sign on the machine that he activated.
Oh, that's true. Says, they're missing that.
Leela saving button or something like that.
I also, speaking of disgusting sounds, I'm kind of glad you didn't have it because it was just so gross, but the sound of her expelling the super slurm, she put so much effort into it. Just she's, like,
yeah. I mean, I also didn't get the sound of her drinking her own slurm at the end, like sucking her own slurm hole.
Go
ahead.
I also love the sound of Fry trying to bite his own arm.
Yeah.
Like, ein.
That's
another one of the really great lines or whatever in this episode.
Yeah, Leela dumps the super slurm down a sewer grate, and Fry is going to chew his own arms off to get to
only
it.
I didn't have these cursed arms.
God, how far would he have made it if Leela didn't stop him? So they're escaping from the slurm factory, and they meet an old friend.
Stop right there!
Slurm's Mackenzie!
Shh! I want you to take me with you.
Say what?
I'm partied out. All I want is to stay home and rent videos and watch them with a few friends. Is that so much to ask?
Forget it, pal. It says on this bottle cap you have to party with us.
All right. When we get to Earth, but please don't invite too many people. I want to keep it small.
No can do, Slurms.
Bender drives a hard bargain.
He's so merciless.
Yeah, it's like, no, you're going to party with us.
I demand it. We won. Your party's like, I'm so tired. Please, like, no can do.
Bender's evil manifests in so many different ways.
But and earlier in the episode, when Bender saves them by being a drawbridge, he immediately is just like, eh, come on.
He doesn't even have to say it. They just know they have to give him money.
Yep. Even though he liked when they walked on his back. Slurms will not party on Earth. He will party one final time to save the day.
She's gaining on us.
Go on without me. I'll hold her off.
But she'll crush you like a worm. Crushing a smaller worm.
It's all right. I'm so tired of partying. So very tired. I'll save you the only way I know how. By partying! Babes?
Yes, Mr. Mackenzie?
You've served me well these 40 years. But this time I've got to party alone.
But
there'll be other parties for you. Now go. Go. Yeah. Party on, Slurps. Party on, contest winners. Party on.
Crushed by a rock.
I do appreciate the fact that these beautiful young girls in bikinis are at least 60 years old.
Yes. People live much longer in the future. Farnsworth is, what, 160?
140.
Oh, 140. I picked up on this in this listening of this clip, but I love, it's a very Futurama line. It's like, I'm so tired of partying, so very tired. I'll save you the only way I know how, by partying.
Yeah,
it just like instantly contradicts himself. It's great. Sorry, I'm in love with that line.
I do love that the models have been with him for 40 years, because in the real world, they get different models every time for every commercial. The thing that he's had the same two party babes in every commercial for 40 years. This is so great.
And they have names, I think. I think he names them, right? At least one of them has a name.
I don't think so.
I think maybe just Pam Anderson's character is named in the credits, and that's okay. It. Just they gave her character a name for some reason.
And that his partying almost does nothing. It's more that he turned up. He could have gone with them and just turned up the music on that to cause the cave-in, but instead
he wanted to die.
He did want death. Really,
well,
that's what it was.
What was staring him down was a party on Earth, and he just wanted to stop partying entirely.
That's true.
It's because of Bender that he killed himself.
He knew he'd never be free.
Yeah.
He was like, nope, I'll never be free. I got to do it. It's in Futurama continuity, he would make a couple one-off appearances in future episodes, though I like to think they just hired a new Slurms. I want this Slurms to be dead forever.
We never see a new Slurms, but I do want to hope that they found some sort of Slurms Mackenzie audition.
Right.
Yeah.
There were lots of Lassies, so there'd probably be lots of Slurms Mackenzies.
I didn't mention it before, but speaking of violence done to them, I love when they cut Glurmo in half and he becomes the Wizard of Oz Munchkin.
Yeah.
Like two different Munchkin
two
voices.
Billy West voices.
Well, actually, I think that might explain where, you know, future appearances of Slurms McKenzie comes from. Since he is, you know, like a
Wormulon?
Gastropod or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Like, he can clearly survive horrible trauma.
That's true. Maybe he's split into several Slurms McKenzies.
So there's no escape for Slurms McKenzie.
He's trapped down there with the Slurm
now,
Queen.
Now there's two of them, and he's got to party twice as hard.
Well, that queen sucking her own butt. That
yeah, sucking
pretty,
her own butt. Come on, Henry. She's sucking her Slurm hole.
Okay, sorry.
It's much better. So at the end, episode ends with no one learning anything and Fry still being addicted to Slurm.
Commissioner, my crew has made a horrific discovery. It seems that Slurm is produced in a colossal worm hiney.
Piney, you say? Why, with your testimony, we'll finally be able to outlaw this insidious Slurm.
Outlaw Slurm? Don't pay any attention to him, sir. Grandpa's making up crazy stories again.
I'm not your grandpa. You're my uncle from the year 2000. Okay, Grandpa. We'll take care of the bad worms. Don't you worry.
And they end the episode in the season by toasting to Slurm. So nobody, everyone is still into drinking Slurm, even though they know where it comes from.
It's not just that Fry still is. They're all pretty okay with it.
Yeah, Bender has it for the first time. He's never tried it before, but he's like, this worm butt stuff is not bad.
After what they've been through, it is funny, but it's like, hey, this is pretty good. Yeah.
So, and then Fry ends it by drinking that out of Bender's hole.
That's right, drinking out of Bender's Slurm hole. Wow, Bender drinks the Slurm and it leaks out of his new Slurm hole.
Yeah, and then Fry would rather the universe drink worm droppings than him lose Slurm.
Yeah,
and just drink a different soda. There's other sodas, Fry. God,
this episode is really great. I like how it transcends a simple Willy Wonka parody to become something unexpected. I like how they made that 180 degree turn like in this at the end of the second act. It's a really good choice.
Yeah, I mean, production wise, this was this is the end of the first season.
Yes.
This is still technically the beginning of the broadcast of season two. But this is where they ended up in a pretty good last episode of the season, I'd say.
Any thoughts on this, Jeremy? Final thoughts?
No, I mean, I completely agree. I think any lesser show would have just gone with a straight Willy Wonka parody where, you know, like some character or another gets thrown out for doing something stupid and a lesson is learned or whatever. But they don't do that. They just completely blow it off. And, you know, eventually you even see the fact that the Slurm factory that we, you know, take the tour of is just a sham. It's a put on. And you see like a worm and a Grunkalunga just having a smoke break in the fake studio door.
That's right. Yeah. It's all just a show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like
so,
that.
I really enjoy this. And having watched Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory so many times as a kid and having lived through Spud McKenzie mania, like I immediately recognized what was going on here. And it's packed with funny lines and funny sound effects like Fry eating his own arm. it's a great episode. Yeah.
I'm questioning the logic now where apparently nobody sees the inside of this factory, but they put all this on for the sake of a contest winner. Why even have the contest to begin with?
If you're going to have a contest, why have it at your actual factory instead of, like, you know, putting on some...
Yeah.
If they constructed a fake factory, why do it next to the real factory?
I think Glurmo just wanted to be caught. That's my secret theory.
I think he gets off on it.
Yeah.
But, part of the plan is maybe they definitely wanted to murder the people, too, who they hoped to be found out. And I'm sure they sold a lot of Slurm cans with that promotion for the contest. That's true.
Maybe they just thought no one would find the bottle cap. thanks for listening to us for our entire season. This has been so much fun. And I will say, I will put out a plea to our listeners on the Patreon. I don't think you'll leave the Patreon, but please don't. I don't think anyone left after Talking Critic was over. We took a short break. So, like as we said earlier on previous announcements, we'll do a second mini series once we hit that $11,000 goal. And I think we'll hit it by the time, like, the summer months roll around. So we're going to take a short break because we can only make so much stuff. stuff at our current level of quality. So thanks for supporting us, and please stick around. There's still going to be lots of exclusive stuff like interviews and season wrap-ups.
There's
and
deleted scenes to come for Futurama as well, folks. So.
And what else are we doing? Oh, yeah, community podcasts and specials, anything we can think up. We're going to have a lot of extra content on the Patreon, so it's not like you're not going to get anything after this. I'm trying not to sound desperate and sweaty. Like, please, I'm begging you. Look into your hearts.
Bob and I are going Hollywood soon. We're going to Hollywood to record some special stuff too. So keep your eyes on the skis.
Keep
folks.
Watching those skis. So yes, Jeremy, you're the special guest. Where can we find you? And everyone should know what you do.
Yeah, you can find me at Retronauts.com. You can find me on Twitter. I'm GameSpite. And you can support Retronauts, which also helps Bob, by going to patreon.com/retronauts. And we talk about old video games. That's what we do.
Oh, yeah. Find me on Twitter, Bob Servo. Say hi. And please, I love friendly conversations. Henry, how about you?
I'm HENERYG on Twitter. And I thank you all again for supporting this Patreon. And stick with us. We've got so many more cool things. And have you even listened to all of Talking Critic? I don't know. Maybe give that a shot.
23 episodes of Talking Critic you probably haven't heard. Maybe, possibly. But yes, we're going to do a deleted scenes episode in the future. So thanks so much for supporting our Patreon and paying for this whole the crazy production happened. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.
You'll have to wait till you're partying with Slurms McKenzie. When will that be? Soon enough. That's not soon enough.